right. Wagon Wheel Time, the podcast that answers your questions on cricket. I don't know why I forgot what that was. If you're in the chat with the YouTube today, I probably won't have a lot of time for a lot of super chats, but if you've got something desperate, you can ask in there. But if not, the best way, as always, is to support us on Patreon at Good Areas Podcasts, and you can find us there. Like Ellie has, who says, how did Pat come and stay in Cricket Australia system when he was out injured for so long? Are there other cricketers who get taken care of by boards that don't get to pay back on on-field results? Yeah, it happens all the time. I mean, it happens all the time within Cricket Australia. You could say that Jofra is probably an example of that a little bit as well, although he was obviously never injured as Pat Cummins was. Someone like Bert Cockley, I think the New South Wales quick, who probably is a similar age to Pat Cummins and now works in USA cricket. I think he's probably another example who was probably kept on a little bit longer just because they figured that if he ever came right. We've just seen it with Will Pekoski is another one, right? Like that's why you have a professional system. What if Will Pekoski gets good at 27, 28 and he doesn't get concussion, doesn't have issues from concussions anymore, gets over his mental health issues, then you've got a really good batter. That's why you want a professional system. So yeah, no, there are plenty, I don't even know all the ones, but there are plenty of players who, you know, one of the more interesting cricketers in Australia is a guy called Alex Keith, who was offered a contract for Victoria, despite the fact that everyone knew it was a bit early to offer him a contract, but they offered him a contract so he wouldn't go and play Aussie rules football. That didn't work. Alex Keith didn't make it as a cricketer and actually weirdly went back and became an Aussie rules footballer. But they had to start doing things like that because they were fighting with other sports and there aren't that many 6 foot five guys who can, you know, I think their idea was he'd be able to bowl 80. He was essentially Cameron Green before Cameron Green. Right. Like that was their hope for Alex Keith. And it didn't happen that way. He probably wasn't quite quick enough and his batting never quite matured at the way that he should have. So yes, there are plenty of those out there in different ways that have been kept on or given contracts when they shouldn't have been. And that's what you want a professional system to be. It should make mistakes. Rob says, why do test matches start at 10 a.m. or later? Why not start at 8 or 9 if daylight permits? Is this the ground staff preparation time or just tradition? A lot of it is to do with moisture. If you start it too early, you might actually get some too much moisture in the surface. So that can be an issue in certain places. There are places that obviously can start before 10. And I think there have been places that have started before 10, Rob. But yeah, my understanding, and I could be wrong on this, is generally moisture. Ground staff will be up at crack of dawn anyway. So I don't think it would matter for the ground staff, unless I'm wrong. And then I suppose you've also got just the tradition of when people go to the games at this stage might also play a part. But I would have thought it would be more to do with moisture. Person says, in reading your new book, The Art of Batting, it got me thinking, is there a bowling equivalent to WG Gray? Someone who was able to adapt to the shift from underarm bowling to overarm. Bonus question, convince me that the NBA draft isn't rigged. No one will be helping the Mavericks at the moment. So that one's easy. There isn't quite a bowling equivalent to WG Grace. There's quite a few guys between the 1950s and 1960s who, 1850s, 1850s and 1860s, who start to become experts on overarm bowling. But if you ask me, I would say that the person is really Fred Spofforth, and he's nowhere near the level of cricket that WG Grace is. But he starts as an underarm bowler, sees the England Tour Australia, learns overarm bowling on his own and then adds swing to that, right? He's written a book about it. You can find it on Kindle. I don't think it costs very much. But it's really interesting the way he was thinking about it in the 1800s was so advanced. It's one of my favorite passages of any, it's one of my favorite books in cricket. And it's not even a book. It's like 20 pages maybe. But yeah, he's probably that person. And then I suppose you have Lohman and Barnes come on the back end of that. But by that stage, bowling was quite developed. Lemon says, with Kohli retired, is a Sai Sadarshan debut likely in the upcoming England series with India's love of left-right-hand combinations? Yeah, with Gautam Gambhir, I think it's a big chance. Just also think he's a very good player. So yes, I think so. I was saying on another podcast today, the guys from Crick Buzz, some of the commentators there had me on for a podcast. And I think Gil probably has to decide whether he wants to go up or down. And once he decides whether he's going to go up and down, a lot of questions will be answered from that, I think. Naveen says, been reading through Reddit threads after college retirement. A lot of people, while discussing his client, call it post-COVID. But also, almost no one mentioned the wobble ball. Is the wobble ball just something that casual fans don't know about? Even in commentary, it rarely gets brought up. Yeah, it's not. you know, we, if you're on this channel or our main channel, it's something we talk about all the time. I try and mention a lot when I'm doing proper commentary stints as well, because it's a really important thing. There are a lot of former players who don't really believe it's Super Bowl still. There are a lot of former players who are like, wow, Courtney Walsh bowled it and Sean Polly bowled it. And it's like, yeah, now everyone's bowling. But yeah, it's certainly something that is not as known or discussed as I believe it should be. I'm fighting the good fight out here, Naveen. Sandip says, since Kohli has just retired from Tess, where do you rank him amongst the Indian best batters in Tess? And what will you miss the most? I mean, he's just box office. I just love following him. When the Fab Four came out, he was the player I picked straight away. He was just the one that most spoke to me, and nothing has changed since. Where do I have him? I have him behind Tendulkar, Gavaskar, Dravid, and ahead of Virendra Sehwag. Someone should write a book on that. William says, I've seen lots of discussion recently that Australian conditions aren't as suited to tall, fast bowlers as they were previously. How true is this? I mean, Josh Hazlewood was pretty unplayable. I don't know anything about this. There is a thought that the wobble ball is probably slightly better from a slightly shorter bowler. That sort of skittiness, because you're going to keep the stumps in play a little bit. I wonder if that's what people are talking about. There's no doubt also Australian wickets have changed. So maybe you need a slightly different kind of bowler in the future. But that's not something I can give you a lot on there, William. Person says, in your new book, The Art of Batting, available now where books are sold, you mentioned Stephen Smith got Tommy John surgery or ulnar collateral ligament reconstruction. How many cricketers have gotten this surgery? In baseball, it's pretty common amongst pitchers. So Tommy John was a pitcher, I think, wasn't he? There have been a lot of batters who've had elbow issues. I think Williamson, Sachin, Smith are three famous versions. I think all three of those have had it. There's something, I don't exactly know if it's the fielding or the fielding combined with the batting, because we don't seem to see it as much with pace bowlers, which would make sense because they're doing bigger throws than fielders are doing quite often. So than in a circle fielders are doing. So I don't know if there's something to do with the technique of batting that can sometimes have an issue there. But yes, it's certainly something that we've seen a few of, but not enough that it's not like fast bowlers and their backs, right? Or anything like that. MF Jim says, hope everyone in the team is safe. Yes, really thankfully everyone from our side are very much safe. History and cricket are colliding yet again, and ultimately the British can be blamed for it. All the lines on the map. The lines matter. When else has history happening affected cricket? The Pakistan attacks in 2000 is well known, and I know you'll mention world wars, so you can exclude them. I mean, there's so many times. I wrote the book, MF, about the history of Test cricket, and it's really about how life has got in the way of Test cricket as much as anything. So my famous one is the Boer War, right? Where you have three Test playing nations. England is fighting South Africa, but it is England, South Africa fighting Afrikaan South Africa, really, right? The Boer War. So you basically have two Test nations fighting each other. So Test matches obviously stop. But Australia is also fighting in that war for the English. So you have all three Test nations playing, and South Africa stopped playing Test cricket for like 3 or 4 years. I'd have to look at the exact dates. And then almost the minute the Boer War finishes, it's like, all right, back to Test matches. That is my most famous example because that's bizarre. But of course, you've got Bangladesh, Pakistan is another fancy one. And when you're talking about lines on a map, if the line on the map was like 200 kilometers in further east, I wonder if Pakistan would have been as good a Test nation as they are today. If the line was 200 kilometers further to the west, we wouldn't have Afghanistan, but Pakistan would probably be an even better Test playing nation, an even stronger side. Like the lines really, really matter. I've talked about this before, about how Sri Lanka boycotted a game against Israel, and that could have changed the entire history of cricket if Sri Lanka had then not gone on to qualify for the 79 World Cup, which is the World Cup that got them Test status. You've got, you know, Zimbabwe separating from, and Namibia separating from Southern Africa and, you know, and all those different areas. The Second World War coming along when it did probably stops Argentinian cricket. And Falklands Islands probably cements it. But I think by the Falklands Islands, I think Argentinian cricket's basically already dead. The Civil War in America probably ends cricket in America, because so many people at that stage are struggling to play cricket as they're traveling around, that baseball becomes an easier sport to play as you're traveling around than cricket is. And so maybe baseball would have taken over anyway, but cricket probably would have had a such a strong foothold at that stage. I think it would have stuck around a lot longer. So yeah, there's some good ones. I want to do a video on this, by the way. And I think I've got some others. I think I've got notes down somewhere on all this. Sandeep says, Rachel Hayhoe Flint is an amazing woman. I only learned after reading about her and overthrowing cricket's empire. My last book, I don't have that to put up. Who are some other awesome people in cricket, lesser known to casual viewer on and off the field, that I should check out? I mean, CB Fry is obviously incredible, but did CB Fry become a Nazi? Or was he a Nazi sympathizer? But yeah, see Aubrey Smith is one of my favorite ones. You've got some of the sort of weird ones in Australia that become celebrities, like Max Walker and Mike Whitney, of like incredible second careers. Edward Barton was Australia's first prime minister, and he was also a cricket umpire. Who else do we have that are sort of random people that have had incredible lives from cricket? Feel like, I mean, obviously Imran, but I'm trying to think of someone more random than Imran. Leary Constantine is obviously another one where you just have to know about his life if you love cricket. I think there's a really obvious one in New Zealand, and I can't think of what the name is and who I'm overlooking, but there's certainly a New Zealand cricketer. Is there a New Zealand cricketer who might have captained them in football and cricket? Susie Bates is, of course, another dual athlete. So those are really fascinating. Compton, Botham, Keith Miller, trying to think of some others that have gone on to have impacts in other worlds. There are some, but I can't think of any. Like, I know there's Indian and New Zealand ones, but I can't think of their names. I'm trying to think. There's another guy who was a cricketer from South Africa, and I've forgotten his name as well. But at one stage, he claimed to have cured his cancer by going on long walks. He's got an incredible life. Me and Abhishek wanted to do something on him. And, of course, Chuck Fleetwood-Smith is another one off the top of my head. Neil says, did Kohli the test batter look done to you? Or has he perhaps just had enough after averaging 30 over 4 years and isn't keen on a 5-test tour, or both? I kind of figured that if he didn't make runs in Australia, that I just didn't see a way back, because the Australian wickets suit him so well. Likes the extra pace. I know they're not exactly normal Australian wickets, but they've still got the extra pace and bounce, which he likes. I still think he's probably not that far away from a nip or a tuck from being a very good test player again. But I don't think he'll ever get back to the Kohli levels. And I don't think he'll ever be consistent again. So from that point of view, probably done. Bloody Bugger says, thoughts on Marvin Adepatu? He seems a little forgotten compared to his contemporaries, Aravinda, Jay Warner, and Sankara. So I reckon, I don't think he was in the book, but I think we might have covered him in one of our videos somewhere before. Because, and I'm just trying to look this up. So Marvin Adepatu averages 39 in test cricket, but in a very, very poor team. Played with them over 17 years. Not a very poor team, I should say. Started in a poor team. They became a good team towards the back end of his career. But see if I can bring this up, because it is one of the cooler things. Him and, is it Ken Rutherford? I think him and Ken Rutherford are two of the players that have had terrible starts that really tank their career and their reputation. Here we go. I don't have the full... Where are we here? After 26 tests, Marvin Adepatu was averaging 28, right? And after 3 tests, his high score in test cricket was 1. And he kind of never really recovers from that. As I said, he gets an average of 29. So if you take out the first, 26 tests. So I'm just trying to have a look at the date on that. What's that? So basically, in the 90s, he doesn't make any runs. I can probably just make this easy and just skip to the 2000s. So in the 90s, he doesn't make any runs. In the 2000s, he averages 43 as a Asian opening batter at that period. Like, that's from a team that doesn't really have a history of great top order players. Like, I'd take that any day of the week. That's what, Azhar Ali type numbers. And it's 44 at home, 41 away. Let's just have a look how this breaks down. In England, He averaged 55, only three tests, to be fair. New Zealand, he averages 28, only two tests. And South Africa, he averages 15 from five tests. So that record holds up against a lateral moving ball. I did think he was a very good player. But yeah, don't start your career with three test matches where your high score is one, would be my tip for any players. And I just think he probably played too young. I think he's a more than acceptable test player. And who, like, probably like Ken, I think, was it Ken Rutherford played out of position or something? I can't remember. I'll answer this Satchmo question, but I'll do it after the break because it's a very good one. And I think I know a little bit about this. You're watching Wagon Wheel. I'm Jared Kimball. I once made a pair in a club game, which is almost impossible to do. But I've been obsessed with batting my entire life. And so I put that into my new book, The Art of Batting. Being that I'm not very good at that skill, I decided to talk to other people who were. So I hit up as many contacts as I could just to talk about batting. Rahul Dravid, Brian Lara, AB de Villiers, Kumar Sangakkara, Ross Taylor, Susie Bates, Nasser Hussain, Ian Chappell, and so many, many, many more. I wanted batters to talk about how they and their friends made runs, because that is the art of batting. Welcome back. Satchmo says, was the level of injuries in Packer cricket sustainable? Teams were rarely able to pick from a fully fit squad. It's really fascinating. So he put so much pressure on the cricketers to play so many games. I'd have to go back in my numbers, but they played an amazing amount of one-day games where they were almost, which had just never happened before, amazing amount of super tests. And also, when you weren't playing for the major team, you were quite often playing in like exhibition games and things out in the country. His system was horrendous on players. I'd say it's way worse than probably anything outside of maybe the county system. But the problem with the county, or the plus with the county system, is if you're a top player, you can pull back a little bit, right? This was like top level cricket. These guys were playing at their maximum. You're bowling to Barry Richards or Viv Richards, right? Or Gordon Greenidge or Greg Chappell. You can't run in and bowl little medium paces. On top of that, the helmets weren't ready. And he picked all the best, world's best fast bowlers, right? And just pinged people with them. So there were probably more impact injuries than ever before. So yeah, I think that I understand what he was trying to do, but yeah, just completely misunderstood rest and recovery times of professional cricketers. A bit like the people who invented the county system. Neil says, you mentioned a couple of weeks back that Fred Truman rather than Harold Larwood was the first modern bowler. How so? And what about Ray Limwell? Okay. So, weirdly enough, this came up when we were writing the book, because one of the editors of the book came back with, surely Larwood is the first modern seam bowler. Larwood is a slingier bowler with a low action who bowled with the back foot, no ball law. Truman and Wes Hall, but Truman is slightly before Wes Hall, are the first sort of tall, big bowlers who can swing the ball, seam the ball, hit the deck. Linwell is another very similar but more skillful version of Harold Larwood. That was the sort of bowler before, was much more like that. And then we have this generation of Truman, Hall, all the Australians, all the West Indians. You end up with Ishant Sharma, right? And I'm trying to think of a Pakistani, Nazim Shah, right? You end up with those sort of taller, hit the wicket types of bowlers. And that is kind of what Test cricket bowling becomes for a long period. We're now maybe moving back slightly to a different style, but that's basically what it has become. And height hasn't gone away, right? So having the lower arm action of Larwood and Linwell, and you know, just having maybe one weapon, I think Truman is the first one that starts to get a little bit more than that. Sandeep says, considering the recent developments with the Saudi Slam, is everything pointing towards a complete overhaul of the cricket calendar after the 2027 season? Potentially the last Cricket World Cup in its current format, changing world tech. Yes, everything's changing. So for those who haven't seen it, I obviously did a bunch of videos about the Saudi Slam and about the relationship of the Ambani family and Saudi Arabia and world cricket and all these different things based on the leak that Chris Barrett got. From that, the new CEO of the ICC is a former Ambani employee. Colour me shocked. This is where it's been going for a long time. I think there is going to be a change. There's certainly going to be a relationship with Saudi Arabia, but clearly the most important people in cricket are the Ambanis by such a large distance now. They're probably sick and tired of me talking about it. But yeah, it's going to change. I don't know what the ideal calendar is. Send it. I'd have to have a look. Sashbro says, what was the earliest great spin bowler who might make a top 50 all-time spinners list? Hugh Trumbull, Sashbro, I think is probably the first guy, isn't he, that probably makes that. I don't think, and he's around just before Aubrey Faulkner and all those guys, and I'm not sure that Aubrey Faulkner would make it. Then it just depends on your theory on Barnes, right, at that point. But yeah, off the top of my head, Hugh Trumbull, just a genius level bowler, well ahead of his time. Did he have the most wickets? He had a bunch of hat tricks and now has a cafe at the MCG. Ian says, how is the IPL suspension likely to affect the calendar outside of India? I know most of the English players have flown out of India. Will most international players play beyond the original schedule finish date? I don't know, Ian, only because I haven't really looked at the calendar beyond that. It's going to have some impact. But so is the PSL, perhaps. They both should have a little bit of impact on it. But I haven't done enough looking at that at the moment. PJ says, what does success and failure look like going ahead for the franchise leagues that aren't the IPL or Saudi? Yeah, so I think the PSL has probably set itself up pretty well now. I've just been like, there's no point. We are just a separate league. We exist within that to ourselves. And I think that seems pretty fair, right? Like, I think that's the right way of doing it. You'll see a lot of leagues doing that. What you'll probably see in the next little while is a lot of leagues trying to work out what their place in the world is, where they fit on the food chain. So I've said this before, there's basically a couple of chances for some international type leagues. So SA20, Major League Cricket, maybe the 100. The Big Bash might eventually fit into that as well. Big Bash and New Zealand should just come together. And then you'll have a bunch of what we will just call purely domestic leagues, right? And that should be leagues like Sri Lanka, New Zealand. CPL is a weird one, isn't it? Because of the USA, but you know, that's what they should be. And by purely domestic, I don't mean that you don't get international players, but you probably don't try and get Rashid Khan. And what you actually try and do is make sure that it's a great tournament for your local fans, right? And so that's kind of what the Big Bash did at its best, right? So I think that's what leagues should be looking at, is trying to make themselves the best they can for the local fans. And that also, if you do mash up some of these leagues, you could still have a separate league for your local fans as well, like a smaller one. So there are other ways of doing it. But yeah, so failure is non-existing, right? Because then you really stuff something up. Manon says, so I am a left-arm pacer, but I'm not exactly very aggressive. No crazy celebrations or aggression after a wicket. I'm also a very good fielder compared to most, if not all, of my teammates. Do both go against pace bowler stereotypes? Do professional pacers need to have aggression to be successful? And why are pacers not good fielders? Just time spent practicing. Bolt is kind of exception to both, I think. I don't think you need to be aggressive to be a great bowler. I think there is a natural grumpiness in bowling. There's something about the walk back to the mark, right? So I played with a cricketer recently, and it's just like, I was thinking as he's walked back to his mark in the grumpy way, he's just probably walked back to his mark without a wicket so many times that it has affected him. And that occasionally comes out at umpires, at players, at captains, at whoever. And it's also, you are the hunter when you have the ball in your hand. And this is probably more a traditional form of cricket, because T20 cricket's not quite like this, but traditionally you're the hunter. So there is a form of aggression there. But realistically, you've just got to be good at your skill set. Fielding is a little bit different. I do think that fielding relies on a lot of hand-eye coordination, right? And that you would expect batters to be better at hand-eye coordination than anyone else. And catching, probably also that fast twitch muscle fiber reflex type skill that you need. Again, you would think the bowlers wouldn't have that as much. And that seems to be the case. Among the Indian batters that you have seen, how would you rate Rohit Sharma on pure talent? Where would he rank just after Sachin? I would probably have it as Sachin, Viru, Rohit, VVS, I think. Am I missing someone? Because I'd have Kohli and Dravid lower than that. Have I seen anyone else? Do I see people? And Jaiswal might be on that list as well. If we're talking about pure talent, I'd like to see 3 or 4 more years of it. But if we're talking pure talent, I would have Jaiswal on that list. Can I put Vinod Kambli there? No, I probably can't. I probably shouldn't. Ellie says, 2 months long, IPL PSL, one game a day, seems too much and gets a bit boring. How are they going to make it sustainable to have 6 months long from a broadcasting perspective? So one of the big issues that they have at the moment is the one game a day. You don't need one game a day, right? If I'm watching the NBA and there's a boring game on, I turn it on to another game. I have multiple options throughout my evening. I can even pick the game that I want to watch and skip all the others and maybe I'll still see the wrong game. Same with baseball. Same with football. That's one of the issues, Ali. Because you get four bad games in a row from Monday through to Thursday, it's going to affect the entire rest of the week, right? So, yeah, that means your team will be playing, what, every 3 to 4 days then? You'll have multiple games to watch as a casual fan. Yeah, that's how I would do it. Lemon says, the laws of cricket have changed. Now there are no stumps at the non-striker's end, and the umpire is completely digital so that bowlers can run and bowl through where the stumps once were. Okay, yeah. What major changes would we see to how the game is played? Yeah, it allows you to do like a sneak version of angles, right? So at the moment, you can only stretch it by 2 meters or whatever it is. That would allow you to have a 5 meter radius. I'm not sure it would change cricket massively, but it would obviously change things quite dramatically because the ability to bowl over or around or through the stumps at any stage means that the batter has a much harder time of lining you up. So there should be a natural advantage to bowling, but it should have a natural advantage. I wonder if it also really helps bowlers who can bowl high action and low action. So the combination of the two. MF Jim says, how would a team prepare for a one-off test match like the World Test Championship? Is it just pick the best 11 or do you pick players who could negotiate the other team's strength? No, it's not. I don't think it's any different than a normal test match, MF Jim. You know where the wicket is going to be played. You know roughly the sorts of players that you need. When you go into that match, it just depends on how you work it out as a team. Some teams will probably, most teams pick like the first 8 or 9 players automatically, right? There usually aren't that many changes. And so you're looking at your last 2 players to be like, well, this player will actually match up really good on this wicket against this team, or we'll just pick the best player. Like every team's going to be different about that. I don't think this is any different than a normal test match from that perspective. It is from other ones. PJ Goddle says, what happened to Kevon Cooper? So there's a couple of those West Indian players who had very, very good little periods and then just sort of disappear entirely, right? Kevon Cooper is probably the most famous one, but there's a couple of other lower ones. Is it Krishna Santokhi? Is he the other one I'm thinking of? And there's a couple of others. I think bring up his numbers here. I would assume that he was just bowling medium pace, right? And I didn't do a lot of analysis of him at the time. And he's kind of before I started to take all that stuff very, very seriously. But my guess of him would be that his bowling, probably he couldn't get the revolutions on the ball as much as he used to. Or it's possible he was like a mystery, what would you say? A mystery spin bowler? Is that the way of that you would look at someone like that? Why can't I find his name? I did write Cooper. I'll do it again. So I would have thought those are the two most logical things that would have happened with him, which is one is that either he was worked out or two, he couldn't actually physically do what he needed to do after that. Let me just bring up his record just for 1 second. So we should be able to get a bit of a better idea of this. He was a bit like Benny Howell. He actually did well to get himself into the game because everyone I ever talked to was like, he's no good. And I was like, he looks really good. So he averages what? 19, 20, 25, 14, 25. Yeah, I would say it's injury looking at this, mate, because his averages don't change all that much. He continued to get wickets all the way from the beginning to the end. And he only has 1 year of going at over 8 runs and over and 1 year of going at over 7.5 runs and over. And those years, he's still taking a lot of wickets. So my assumption based on the very little bit I've looked at here would be that something happened to him. So 2008, he really starts his career in 2011 and it's really over by 2017. So I'm not an expert on this. People have asked me this before, but I haven't managed to quite get to it. All right, that is it for the Patreon chats. So let's get to some of the super chats. I saw a couple lined up beforehand.
Remember that cricket is a funny game. 100 years before we protected our head, players looked after their groins. So don't be as stupid as old cricketers. Protect your computer now. NordVPN is the protection I use when facing cyber shortballs or when rights issues try to dismiss me. Geo-block so you can watch all the cricket you want. Grab your NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/Kimber.
Ayant says, your views on the Cricinfo greatest T20 league players ever. Who would your top five ever be? And can only IPL greats like Bumrah or Dhoni be top five? I didn't see this list, so I don't know it. Sorry. I don't spend as much time on Cricinfo as I used to. I felt that there was a period of time where we were over-indexing on the IPL when we were making these great lists. Only because being good in the Blast and being good in the Big Bash and being good in the CPL also all matter. And being good in multiple leagues is probably better than just being good in one league, right? But now that the IPL has just become the major league, I think you probably have to look at that. But there's also, if you're a Pakistani player, you can't be in the top five then. So that doesn't make any sense, right? So I think you have to be a little bit more, what's the best way of putting it? You have to be a little bit more sensible with that. Top five would probably be AB de Villiers, Chris Gayle, Andre Russell, Sonny Narine. Who would I have as my fifth? I suppose that's where you sort of get into. Maxwell has had some great years in the IPL, but also had more than his share of stinkers. Josh Butler is probably high up on that list as well. Although I just did a piece on his Blast numbers, and I don't think his Blast numbers are as spectacular as I would have expected them to be. I'm trying to think of some other older players. And Lasith Malinga probably would be up there as well, right? That means I don't have Bumrah, doesn't it? So I would have Bumrah ahead of Lasith Malinga. And Sky could easily eventually, or maybe couldn't because he's quite old. But Gayle and AB de Villiers are quite flexible. I mean, if it's your greatest T20 league players ever as well, it is quite interesting because the Indian players don't get to star in some of these other leagues where they would be able to boost their numbers as well, right? Like it does go both ways, that kind of stuff. Keshav says, does Rohit and Virat sticking to just ODIs give a new lease of life to the format? Most thought would die down soon, at least keeping it relevant until 2027 and beyond. No. If they win the World Cup in 2027 and they retire, it's still going to leave a hole at the end of that. It doesn't give it a new lease of life. It might, because the issue really isn't how much fans like it or not. It's the fact that it doesn't make as much money as T20 cricket, and Test cricket is already a better sort of legacy product, right? So no, I don't think it really changes all that much when it comes down to it, right? Like I get the point of the question. This is what I would call the good test theory. Mike Atherton years ago wrote a column about how me and Sam were doing this film called Death of a Gentleman, but Test cricket wasn't really in trouble. Because in the last couple of weeks, there've been a couple of good test matches. Now, Mike Atherton is a very smart man, and I'm sure he would look back on that and be like, didn't get that one right. Didn't quite understand what these guys were doing. Didn't get that right. Now, we've had lots of good tests, and test cricket is still, it's in a healthier spot than it was when we probably started the film, but it's still, in some ways, really, really struggling, right? So, having Virat and Rohit prolong it only makes it relevant while they're prolonging it. And they're not going to be around that long. And what if they lose? What if they retire a couple of weeks before the World Cup, right? Or what if one of them gets injured? Do you know what I mean? I don't think it changes the fate of the format, because the fate of the format is not tied into them. It might specifically help the World Cup if India win it, but that's about it. And I don't think that would matter if Virat or Kohli, Virat or Rohit were playing or not. Keshav also says, also Jared, where to find The Art of Batting Hardcover in India? It's unavailable on Amazon. We're not sure what's happened. is the best answer. I just got an email back from Bloomsbury before. It should already be on sale. I don't know if it's directly through Bloomsbury India or if it's through a different sort of company. I don't know if it got printed because I think it's a different copy. So I have the hard copy, the hardcover, I should say. And the hard copy, which is different than a hardcover, right? You know, which is a, do I have another one here? No, somewhere around me. But it's slightly different. I was under the thought process that what they were going to do is in Australia and India, they wouldn't do a hardcover. They'd just do a paperback version. But I now don't know what is happening. So I'm not sure if they've actually imported some of them and they haven't just come over, or they're printing their own and they just got caught behind. If you want to know the truth, and I thank each and every one of you for coming on all these podcasts and everything, because you've all played a part in this, I don't think anyone expected this book to sell as well as it has. It's the number one selling cricket book in India, despite the fact you can only get it digitally or via audiobook. It's the number three selling cricket book in the UK. It's flying, right? And I don't think anyone really ever expected that to happen. I think everyone was hoping that it would sell pretty well, but not to the level that we're talking about now. Like, it's really gone well and truly beyond what we thought it would be. Now, I might still slow down and, you know, I don't know how many people have read it at the moment. Do you know what I mean? Like, maybe when people start to read it, they're like, oh, okay, it's not great. The Reddit thread, which I haven't read, but people have told me about, is really positive. The reviews have been really positive. The feedback I've had on it is certainly the most feedback I've ever had a book and the most positive feedback I've ever had on a book. So it's all good signs. So if you own the rights to The Art of Batting in India, you're going to want to get it out in paper, right? So I would assume now that that something has happened and they're on the way of trying to rectify that. Could just be a simple problem too. I've never had a book that has actually been available in multiple countries within like the first month of it being published. I've never had a book that's actually ever been available in three different countries without you ordering it from another a place. So we're already ahead. And the fact that it's selling in India and selling so well means that they're going to print a lot of copies, right? That's how these things work. So it should be great. They should catch up with it. Uncarneo says, your view on the Queensland kid, Vidler, lots of pace, really exciting. I haven't done a deep dive on him as much. And Fergus O'Neill. So Fergus O'Neill, obviously, I've seen him play a lot more. He probably has played a lot more, but also he's Victorian. And so, you know, I'm going to see more of him. I wonder where, if he's just a little bit too slow for Test cricket. But I would have said that about Boland, and those things maybe don't matter as much as they used to. He's just ridiculous for Victoria. I would have thought that he feels like to me the Boland replacement rather than the anyone else replacement. But because he's tall, I don't know what his actual release point is. He might be the Hazelwood replacement, but I think he's a Hazelwood without the extra gear of pace up, is my guess. That makes him more like Steve McGoffin than he does, or Ashley Nofke, than Hazelwood. So it's a bit, I don't know. I think he's an incredibly skillful bowler. He's playing county cricket at the moment. What's he been doing? Why can't I find his figures? So he took 5 for 19 against Warwickshire, 5 for 81 against Durham. So 8 wickets in that game. Yeah, he seems to be doing pretty well. What's that? Yeah, he's got quite a lot of wickets actually in the, what, 4 games so far. Look, I think he's a talent. I'm not sure what his ceiling is. And that probably comes down to pace. So if you go to Vidler, who's a little bit different, obviously, because of the Callum's extra pace, maybe, and he's younger as well, he's quite interesting. But yeah, I think they're both, I say Vidler's quicker. I've only seen a little bit of him, but I think he's quicker. I think they're both really, really talented bowlers. And one is very young and undeveloped. The other one is very developed, so it's easier to have more of a thought on. I suppose if you were putting it at the moment, you would say that Vidler probably has a higher ceiling, but that's just because younger players kind of feel like they have a higher ceiling. Walkie Alive says, long time no see, happy the book is doing great, please figure out how to get it in India, don't have Kindle with me. Yep, well, I've just explained that one, haven't I? Yeah, we are getting it to India. It is supposed to be in India already. It says the 8th of May, we're now on the 13th of May. I don't know what the issue is, but we're working on it. But obviously, I'm not really in a position to be able to force anyone on it. But if you like it and you do have a Kindle or you do listen to Audible, please buy it. And, you know, and if not, wait for the print copy. It'll be out fairly soon. Ravish says, I have faith this book will do good because in other sports, there are more of these top 20 or top 50 player rankings, and in cricket, it was needed. Yeah, it's weird. In fact, I kind of felt when I was writing it that, like, at the time I was like, this is just a book that everyone writes. And I was like, actually, there aren't many of these in cricket at the moment. You know, Ted Dexter's book I really like, and Simon Hughes did a great book about batting and everything else. But I actually, weirdly enough, a bit like when I did the Test cricket book, and I was like, everyone's sort of done this. And I looked around and went, actually, there aren't that many books on the history of Test cricket. And it's the same here as well. Look, I think it's a good book because of the things outside the list. If the list helps sell it as well, like, the more things that can help sell the book, the better. But please go and find it. Anyway, I'm done. Thank you, I've done all the super chats. I have done all the super chats. Thank you very much to everyone. And we will be back for more Wagon Wheel very soon. I'm always here. Really? I know. I'm always with you. Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Baron Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, you will need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up great clips from your podcast chats and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.